Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limemark Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 44 years. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and we inform each other, we teach each other, we learn from each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you all once again for joining me this particular Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we'll try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will return with the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, that would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions. If you couldn't ask them on the technical net, you could send them to me via email. Or if you have a technological prowess in something in the news and you'd like to share it with us so that we better understand the news, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for puzzles. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space or NASA-related story, of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. And as always, I cut and paste a bunch of interesting articles through the week. I save them up and I put it on a link page, and you can read about these articles at your leisure. I leave them up. They'll be up for another year or two. You get there by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We also have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's quiet. You can get there by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the Internet of the technical net, and I keep it live the rest of the week. So if you're curious about what's going on the repeater and you don't have a radio handy, you can just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and you can listen to the audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater. And as always, I like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. And it has archives of the technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have either moved away from the area or unfortunately become silent keys. So that's the links. Let me drop for a second, and then I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, it's a regular kind of TechNet tonight. I will spare you my lengthening story of identity fraud and such unless someone asks me to. And we'll go to the questions. We're always looking for questions, comments, or topics. Hopefully the first few should be amateur radio related since this is an amateur radio net. But we will accept any questions or comments or topics related to any kind of science and technology. Like to stay away from religion, like to stay away from politics if we can do that. So that's the plan. That should take us hopefully to approximately 10:15, and Paul will join us, WS2N, with the SpaceNet report, which will take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If all the electronics and myself are completely operational, last week I had a problem utilizing All-Star. Tonight I'm back on All-Star, and I hope it doesn't throw me off of it. But, yeah, we'll roll with the punches. Anyway, this is AC2GS with the Limemark Technical Net. We're open for business. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign and what you got for us. Okay, well, at least I know the radio is live because I heard the noise. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limemark Technical Net. We're open for business. We're taking questions. We're taking comments. We're taking topics for discussion. Just hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Net control. Delta 2, Romeo Echo Kilo, name's Brian.
Okay, Brian, I got you on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list tonight?
Yes, Roy, this is KB2 UGU calling you from Newport Richey, Florida. I do miss the Limehawk Net, and I do check in every once in a while. It's good to hear your voice again. I have a question.
Great. Okay, you're number two on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Unfortunately, someone's playing games and throwing a carrier. So I didn't hear your comment. I just heard your initial, and then someone just kind of blocked you. Okay, I got Brian. I got Richie. And I think there was a third person, except that someone just kind of smeared him with carrier. So I couldn't hear any audio at all. So if you're not Brian and you're not Richie, then you're the guy that I'm trying to figure out who he is. So please try again. Okay. Well, I'll give it one last try. If there's anyone else out there who would like to have their name put on the list for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Okay, I think Wesley is going to check in because he sent me an email only 5 minutes ago with a list of things that he was interested in talking about, which are interesting things. Hopefully, it'll interest people out there. So let's go to our list. Brian, what can I do you for tonight?
Good evening, everyone. Hope everybody had a great day and is well. I have a question. I have a SAT satellite controller made by CNS Technologies, and I'm running into an M2 EcoPack antenna. The question is, it's a 144 and a 70 centimeter. If I put a light coat of paint on the antenna, is that going to affect the antenna quality, meaning the receive or the transmit? I haven't done it yet, but before I do, I figured I'd ask. Just a light spray of paint to help it blend in a little bit. It's pretty stark. And you know how big the satellite antennas can be. Over to you. Thank you.
Okay. Basically, hopefully, you're going to spray it with some insulating material. I wouldn't kind of suggest a conductive material. It shouldn't really have a significant effect. It might shift the resonance ever so slightly, but I don't think you'll get any kind of significant problem. If anyone else out there with a different opinion would like to share it, feel free. Okay, so I would assume there's no objections or other thoughts. I mean, we do this all the time. We put up antenna wire with insulation, and although it does shift the resonance ever so slightly and protect the integrity of the wire, you know, that's why it's probably done so often. So, you know, putting some insulating, thin layer insulation on any kind of antenna shouldn't really impact any significant loss.
Thank you, Roy. I appreciate it. I wish you a great evening. I'll be listening on the side. KD2REK listening. Thank you.
Okay, very good, Brian. I hope it works out. It should. and I hope you know it obscures it from people looking around. You know, stealth antennas is a big thing, unfortunately, these days with homeowners associations and other organizations that just can't mind their own business. So it's become a subject in and of itself. Okay, thanks for participating, Brian. I guess that means it's Sir Richie. What can I do you for?
Yes, Roy, the name here is Wayne. If you remember me. I'm in Newport, Richie. I'm in Florida. And I just figured I'd reach out. I always enjoyed your TechNet. I wanted to just talk about this latest thing that I'm involved in. I joined a smaller club down here, and we recently had some members pass on. There's no longer, and some other members moved away, and basically the club kind of panicked because it's a small club, and the onus is now to try and get the younger generation and anyone else really who might have the inclination into ham radio. You know, it's viewed as a dying hobby. At least that's what we've been saying, and it's an alarming thought that the hobby that we all enjoy is passing away because of the technological advances of cell phones and computers and whatnot. So, aside from, we were doing various things. We were volunteering in local race events. There's a lot of athletic events here in Florida, races and you know, runs and all that. And we also, we have a meeting at the library. We actually took over another club's meeting that they folded because of the same problem of attrition. They lost all their members and the club kind of folded. So we took over their spot at the local library to invite and to try and attract people who are curious about ham radio. So I just wanted to hear what your thoughts are on that there, Roy. This is KD2UDU. Over to you there. The name is Wayne again. Roger.
AC2GS. Sorry about that, Wayne. I locked in on your location instead of your name. It's a good subject, and probably I'm a good person to talk about this subject because I belong to two clubs. You know, Limark does very well by itself. It has, I think, in somewhere around 350 members. But I'm also a member of a Brooklyn-based amateur radio club, the Kings County Radio Club. And I hold a lot of hats. I do a lot of things. And one of the many things that I do is try and figure out how to interest the younger people. To tell you the truth, I'm really not that interested in getting 12 and 13-year-olds because I think the inevitable consequences, if history is right, is that, you know, eventually they discover a young woman or they discover college and an occupation, and they're gone for at least 20, 30 years until they have empty nest syndrome because their kids have finally left the house and they have a lot more free time and they can go back into the closet and pull out the radio gear and such. But I look to get any demographics I can. I have gotten 70-year-olds back into the hobby. I have gotten 30-year-olds into the hobby. And just today I got an email from someone who was interested in joining the Kings County Club, who's 16 years old, doesn't have a license yet. I think one of the important things, and maybe you have it and maybe you don't, is you should have a web presence. If you're interested in young people, they're going to do Google searches for things. And if you're a presence on the Internet and Google, you know, if you type in your zip code and say amateur radio club and you're the first or, unfortunately, the second, that I think that's an important thing. So do you have a web presence?
Yes, Roy. The club is called the Gulf Coast Amateur Radio Club. It's a small club. We do have a Facebook website and a web presence. I was also a member of the St. Petersburg Amateur Radio Club, which is a much larger club, and a much grander clubhouse and equipment, and antennas all, you know, in the club, you know, around the clubhouse. Fabulous setup. And I believe it or not, I kind of prefer the more smaller clubs. You know, I moved away from St. Petersburg, so I know it's no longer, I can't even hit the repeater from my present location. But I do like the smaller club better. It's a little more intimate, and I'm more active in it. I mean, I was a member of Limewalk. I wasn't as active as I am now in ham radio, basically, in trying to recruit people and meet people. For Limewalk, I was just, you know, on the repeater and trying to, you know, fit in and, you know, get my call sign recognized by the people out there. But, yeah, we do have a web presence. Back to you there, Liz.
Okay, now I just want to make sure. This is an actual website with a domain that's easy to remember and to tell people. This is, or are you alluding to a Facebook page, which in my mind is a different animal entirely?
You know, I'm not certain. I am not certain. It may be just a Facebook page. So you recommend getting a domain on the internet that has just basically information. It wouldn't be interactive then. It would just be information. Is that correct?
AC2GS. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be interactive, but I mean, it states where you are, what you're doing, what you have scheduled. When's the next net? When's the next get together? And try and keep it up to date. The saddest thing I've ever seen are websites where they talk about an event that's coming up in 2022, because you know the guy who did the web editing moved or passed away or something, and they just kind of left it the way it was 3-4 years ago. I think it's really important to get your own separate website. Facebook, I've never been a big fan. As far as I'm concerned, Facebook is a great place if you're a 70-year-old woman. My sister has gone down way too many cubby holes using Facebook. It's not a place that young kids use, and even 20 and 30-year-olds, they've kind of moved on. So, you know, I mean, you could always go into social media if you have the stomach for it. I don't. But, you know, get yourself a regular, inexpensive website. Put up some nice pictures. Make it timely. Make it up to date so that it looks like someone has written it, and, you know, at least sometime in the last 3, 4, 5 months. And get a domain that's easy to remember. What I did with the Kings County Radio Club, our repeater license had expired before I joined the club, so we had to get a new one, and I found out that there was a call sign that fit something called the Kings County Radio Club very well, KC2RC. And so I immediately snatched up KC2RC.com and KingsCountyRadioClub.com. And because those are easy things to remember, you know, you can put it on a card, you can put it on a poster, you can put it on anything. Before that, we did have a URL that was linked to QRZ, and the URL was approximately 140 characters long, and no one was going to remember that. So keep it pithy, keep it simple, and, you know, make it look nice like it's from millennia. Our old website from QRZ looked like it was 1990. And I realize that, you know, some people have that skill, some people don't have that skill. There's a lot of companies that are practically giving away web hosting. So you can find an inexpensive company with simplified editorial controls and make something up that looks nice, and so that the next time someone in your area Googles whether there's an amateur radio club, hopefully they'll get your site, as they do with the Kings County Radio Club here in Brooklyn. And I get a lot of inquiries, and I get a lot of applications. We have, when I first joined the club, I think we had about 7 or 8 people. We now have 86.
Roger, roger. Late check-in.
Yes, late check-in. Do you want to sign in on the list or just that you came?
Roger, roger. Please sign me in on the list. This is KC2, Queen Yankee Whiskey, JoJo in the mobile.
Okay, Joe, let's get back to Wayne. What do you think what I told you? Does it make sense to you?
I'm all ears, Roy. We do have a newsletter, but it's the emails newsletter. So how would I get in touch with a domain? You said there's various companies that we could get one for a low fee. Do you recommend anybody particular?
Well, I mean, the deals always change. Bluehost, I think, is a very popular, relatively inexpensive web hosting site. You can just Google generically, you know, web hosting site. You're not looking for a commercial one. You're looking for a personal one. And it's not that difficult to figure out what the pay scale is. They differ somewhat in storage capacity, in editing tools. You know, if you want to get fancy, which you probably don't want to, then WordPress is an option. WordPress lets you finesse a slightly prettier looking web page unless you know HTML code. But there's a lot of different ones. So I would sit down and just Google web hosting, personal, and see what pops up, write them down, look around for recommendations, because all these places have endless websites where they complain about web hosting companies or they say good things about it. I'd stay away from whatever GoDaddy is called this week. They're probably the cheapest web hosting, but that's because they're the cheapest web hosting. They're real clunky. They're real slow. So I'd stay away from GoDaddy. But other than GoDaddy, you know, do a Google search, see what you got. Sometimes they even let you sample it for 30 days so you can play around with the equipment, see what works for you, what doesn't. Usually these places will also sell you a domain name, but if you don't want to do it that way, there are third-party domain name companies that will lease you a domain name, you know, a certain amount of money per year, depending upon whether you want to have a .com, which I would suggest because .coms sound much better than anything else. But you can get a .club if you want.
All right, that may be. I'm going to see somebody tomorrow. I'm actually part of a committee within the club that are tasked with this incentive now to try and get more people involved. So one of the other club members is a little more computer literate than I mean. I'm not inept totally, but I think he's a little more computer literate. He's done some really nice flyers for us on the computer and some nice work that he's designed and put out there. So I'm going to discuss this with him and possibly the other committee members if I can. And I appreciate it, Roy. And this is I should have actually talked to you a while ago. This is, I'm like about two months in on this this task, this project so far. We stumbled across a few people here and there, not so many young people. They're actually some of the other members are trying to get in touch with the local scout teams to try and because I was a Boy Scout too, and you know, learning code just didn't gel with me, but that makes a lot of sense about what you said about the younger generation getting sidetracked by the hormonal hormone tendencies and interests.
But yeah, this is good information. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad to be of help. In addition, you know, races is nice, but you're kind of talking to the same audience because, you know, these guys are used to seeing hams with their handy talkies event in and event out. You should kind of try. You can't kind of throw it too wide because then you'd be just return on investment becomes close to zero. But Maker's Faire, technological exhibitions of whatever kind. If you got technical high schools and you got an in with a teacher there, because unfortunately we live in weird times as far as the Boy Scouts and high school and such. You need to actually be insured if you're going to include underage people in your club. So, you know, I don't know how you want to handle that, but, you know, you could use intermediaries of teachers and such that that cushion the blow and allow you to kind of introduce the concept of amateur radio. And, you know, you don't necessarily going to get them as members of the club, but you can get them as friends of the club and, you know, make it kind of loosey-goosey so you don't have to worry too much about insurance and such. But there's a lot of different ways. I have tried for many years to interest young people. We once had a young guy from Brooklyn Tech who came to a meeting because he was into telemetry. And he got this brilliant idea that if he got an amateur radio license, he could use some of the amateur radio frequencies for his telemetry so that it wouldn't be as congested as it already was. And, you know, when you're trying to sell these kids on radio, when I was a kid, the magic of radio waves was phenomenal and still is with me. You know, just last Sunday, I talked to Namibia on my rig, and it's almost like magic to me. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way with kids, as far as I've noticed. The only kind of technical oomph I've gotten out of a teenager is to discuss moon bouncing. So that seems to light some of them up. So, how you get in touch with them and start the conversation, again, that's if you can find events around that and are somewhat technical in nature, you know, food festivals and such, I wouldn't really suggest because I think your return on investments would be zero. But, there's a lot of places to kind of aim. For a time, what I used to do, and I wouldn't recommend it because it didn't really work out well, I did a data fetch with the FCC, and anyone who got a new license in the metropolitan area, I sent them out a letter congratulating them and suggesting that they check us out. We had a couple of members join that way, and we had a couple of other curious guys who came to the meeting but never showed up again. It, you know, when you figured out the cost and the time and the labor and all, it was probably not a good return on investment.
Actually, Roy, we have done that. We've set up a welcome package to give out. The club does do testing at club meeting room. They have testing every second Saturday of the month. And the people that pass the test, they give a welcome package to, and whole information on joining the club. And I'm not sure if we've had any new members come. We also tried to change the focus of the month. We only have monthly meetings. So instead of just club business, they try to have interesting presentations. We built a 10-meter J-pole antenna once. They built. They had a soldering demonstration with kits, multiple kits. It was actually really done well. Multiple soldering stations and kits to make a a voice-activated LED display. So when you spoke, the LEDs would light up. And, nothing radio-related, but, you know, flash and bang, basically, for people to say, wow, look what I built. So that's something we already tried. Some of the things that they proposed doing, like setting up in the Walmart parking lot, setting up in the store parking lot, like a POTA type activation in the parking lot to try and attract curious people, I never thought really were going to pan out, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
AC2GF. Yeah, again, that's something like a real low return on investment. It takes up a lot of time and trouble, and you'll be lucky to maybe catch one person interested in radio at any of these events. Because most people don't, you know, unfortunately, I'm sure no one likes to hear it out there. I mean, I've had people, we used to have our meetings at Methodist Hospital, and the cleanup crew would walk through our meeting place and every so often ask us, what the heck is this going on? And we would tell them, it's an amateur radio club. And they said, what, you play music? So overall, most people have no clue what we do. So, again, if you kind of go to a supermarket, you know, you're going to get people who don't necessarily have any technological interest. And so the chance of finding someone who will light up with the subject of radio waves is not terribly good. It's a good idea that you did with the testing. We did testing as well. I wrote up a whole handbook type of thing that, you know, the top of the page says, well, now what do you do? And the whole premise was, okay, you just passed your exam. What do you do with your exam? You know, what do you do looking for an antenna? What do you do looking for a radio? So it was a couple of articles. I write articles all the time. I you know, they're in Limark. They get published and in Kings County Radio Club. And at the very end of the handout was a little certificate for something like $10 off an annual dues for the club. And we got a surprising number of people who used those coupons.
Okay, well, I guess that'll work out. We also, they generated a mailing list of all hams in the substantial amount of hams, but I think a lot of them are already passed on. You know, they might not be living and breathing anymore, but they sent out letters to them inviting them to the club and saying, you know, we're a local club within your reach, you know, certain mileage. I forget the criteria they used for to qualify to send these out, but it was quite a number of people. I mean, Florida being the retirement capital, you have a lot of older people living and moving here. So some of those names might, like I said, no longer be around. And we really didn't get much return on that either, Roger.
Yeah, I could understand that for a bunch of things. As you mentioned, those records can be as much as 10 years old. It means some of them were renewed a little bit below 10 years ago. So in Florida, with the demographics and such, that's 10 years is a long, long time. When we tried that maneuver, I tried to do the guys who just got licenses because I felt that those were the people that could be kind of talked into the idea of, well, you just got your license. Congratulations to you. You may not know exactly what to do with it. So, you know, wouldn't you like to hang out with a bunch of guys who've been playing radio for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years and, you know, as a kind of wedge to kind of get them interested. So it kind of limited the stamp expense by just having people who recently gotten their license. I didn't kind of edit it at all. We had on the database came up some woman who was head of a maker company in Manhattan. Chances are she wasn't going to go to Brooklyn for a club. But I mailed an envelope to her. And, you know, like I said, we got a couple of takers, but, you know, when you count all the time it took to do it all and the stamps, it was kind of a wash. But, you know, it made sense at the time, so I tried it. I don't think I would just do it globally because, you know, I mean, if you've been in the hobby for 20, 30 years, you kind of know what clubs are. Either you're interested or you're not interested.
Yeah, Roger. I know several IMs that really aren't into the club scene. They just want to do, you know, contesting or whatever on their own. Which is too bad, you know. I enjoy the club. I enjoy camaraderie. My club also has a loaner program for equipment, and for some bizarre reason, we haven't had a lot of takers. Even the newer, you know, the brand new hams. That's why we had that J-Pole session showing, you know. We supplied all the materials, and I think they built 6 to 10 meter J-pole antennas, but hardly anybody wanted to get a loaner radio. And we were hoping to have, we have a 10 meter net on every Thursday night, and there's only been about, you know, 5 or 6 people on it regularly, me included. So it's a little distressing. Like I said, it is a small club, so not a lot of people. But back to you, Roy. This is KD2 UDU.
KC2GS. Well, you know, what can I tell you? We tried a loaner program as well. That was probably about 7-8 years ago. It was a combination of most people who had something wasn't interested, and those that didn't have something apparently weren't interested, and keeping records of where things were because, you know, back then we were much smaller and so, you know, Joe had the transceiver and Sam had the tuner and you know, coordinating these things probably would have been somewhat difficult, but the demand was non-existent, so we kind of killed that one. And as far as the number of participants, you can't really correlate the number of participants with membership, unfortunately. Because if that was the case, then this repeater here would be hopping 25 hours a day, you know, with 350 people. And I mentioned my other club has 86 members, and I think I was talking to 2 members this morning. I had a lot of non-members check into the 10-meter net. So, you know, just because they're members, unfortunately, don't mean that they participate. That's another problem in club membership, is once you get the members, how do you cajole the members into doing things for each other? Now that's a mystery still to me. There are some guys out there who just have charm in them, and they can talk anyone into anything. Unfortunately, that was not what I was born with.
Roger. We as I said before, we were volunteering, and we actually, I wrote an initial letter, and then we, you know, the committee that I'm in, we edited it, you know, to everybody's liking, and then they wanted to send it to everybody that was running a race. And I'm like, no, you don't want to send it to everybody. You have to pick out, you know, target one, or maybe possibly 2 per month. You're gonna wear everybody out. You're gonna have to have us bail after offering our services. Tell them, no, sorry, we can't do it because our members are unwilling. And so right now that whole project is kind of at a standstill. We never sent the letter out yet. And but now, after talking to you, we may not. I was the one that initially proposed it. So you don't think that races would be foot races, you know, would be, or bicycle races. We have those here, too. You don't think those would be a good source of people that might be interested in ham radio, right?
AC2GS. Lately, we've had an influx of pilots. So if you had a pilot thing, maybe sending it out to the pilots. Because there's this curious little correlation between pilots and amateur radio. But racing, I've never seen any kind of correlation between the two.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Actually, one of our members, a good friend of mine, actually lives right on one of those private air parks where if you see a plane on the street, you have to, you know, pull over and let them pass because they're on their way to their private hangar. Kind of, you know, only here in Florida. I've never seen that in New York. But that's an interesting idea, the Royal. I'll have to pursue that. I'm glad I have you to bounce all this off of. Since we're kind of feeling our way along down here. And there's only three other members of this committee that I'm in. And none of us have this experience or ability. So, thank you very much, and I guess we should open it up to comments from the Peanut Gallery, right?
Sure, and you're quite welcome, and anytime you want to discuss this, like I said, I've been doing this off and on for the better part of 8-9 years. For some odd reason, I remember one of the last ham radio universities I attended, the subject came up. And I was talking back and forth to the guy in the front of the room about it because it's an important thing, and most of the stuff I've read seems rather formulaic, like someone back in 1950 wrote it, and people have just kind of been rewriting it ever since then, and you got to kind of change for the times. But like I said, anytime you want to bounce something off of me, feel free. Anyone with any comments about this? I mean, this is kind of an important thing because although, you know, in one part we kind of talk about the aging of the hobby, you get confused because you read about the FCC and over 750,000 people are licensed amateur radio operators, the largest number in the history of the FCC. A lot of those guys are just technicians, and a lot of them are just looking to have a spare frequency when the next Civil War pops up. So, unfortunately, active and participating amateur radio operators are a little bit less than just counting the licenses. So, if anyone has any bright ideas, please share them.
Yes, Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Oscar for late check-in, no traffic.
Okay, Frankie, you doubled with a check-in. Check-in noted. Frank, do you want to say that again?
There we go, okay. WB2BS. So, yeah, you know, the best one idea I thought of was I thought about petitioning the FCC to do away with the so-called sub-band, excessive licensing sub-band, because I really don't think it's an incentive to anybody anymore. Only a very small percentage of amateurs really care about being able to chase the lower 25 kc's of the CW band or the lower portions of the foam band. I've had an extra for 25 years, so it's not validated on my part that I don't want to pass the exam. It just seems like an outmoded way of thinking now. Go ahead.
Okay, but that's principally for people already immersed in the hobbies of, you know, these weird little FCC limitations that they handed out historically. What we were kind of going into is how the heck do you get Joe Pup thinks amateur radio is that thing that his great uncle did in the basement wearing his underwear and such. How do you get him interested in the hobby?
Did my connection drop out in a car? Was the problem on your end, WB2BX?
I don't know. You drop out every so often. I was just saying that Wayne is getting at is how do you interest new people, both new people into a club or new people into the hobby itself? A lot of the people who join the club, I'd say 50% people who join the club have start off with no license. 50% have a license. They might have been in a club a year or 10 years or 20 years ago, and they're kind of thinking, gee, maybe I should look again, type of thing. So that seems to be, that's the situation for Wayne, who has a club down in Florida that's kind of dwindling. You know, he needs to kind of inject a few more members to kind of give it a second life.
Hello, Echo 2, Alpha.
We do have a presence, repeater presence. We have three repeaters at the moment, and we also have a going on right now. They have a fusion net going on. I believe there's also plans to get a 440 repeater up and running. So we're out there, but like you said, like I said, we're trying to get the people who are not even on the radio yet. Trying to fill out the ranks, trying to get more people into ham radio as a hobby. We're competing with cell phones and computers and all the other technological advances. This is KD2 UD. Back to you there, Roy.
Yeah, it's GS. Do you have any nets on your repeaters? Repeaters are great. But I still remember being amazed. There used to be, notice I say used to be, a club in Brooklyn called the Kings County Repeater Association. And their claim to fame was they had a bunch of repeaters. But curiously, I would listen to that repeater for 24 hours and wouldn't hear anything. And I finally realized that these guys don't have any necks. So, you know, repeaters are great, but unfortunately, repeaters' heyday was about 20 years ago with AutoPatch. Now, a few are limping along. Many are quietly in semi-retirement. So you kind of have to make your own business. And the closest thing to making your own business with a repeater is a net. So any regularly scheduled nets on your repeaters?
Yes, there was a net tonight on the 146-350 repeater. There's a net tomorrow night on the Fusion repeater, 146-670. There's also a net Tuesday night, 146, same repeater, 146-670. And then there's a 10-meter net on Thursdays. But now that you mention it, the club that I told you that I joined in St. Petersburg, a much larger club, much grander, many more members, they have two daily nets. They have a morning net and an afternoon net, and then they have a round table just before the afternoon net. So it's something to do every day. And for a while there, I mean, I'm not fully retired anymore. I wound up taking a part-time job to help, you know, pay the bills. But when I first arrived in Florida, I was completely retired. And I was a participant on a daily basis of those nets. And they also had, a technical question thing where they would propose a question and give you A, B, or C, which do you think? And you'd give the answer. And then at the end of the net, they'd say who got the correct answer. And then they got a gold star, which is, you know, you didn't get anything. You just congratulated you over the air. So you're right. You know, the Nets possibly did play a role in keeping people active and keeping the repeater active. And maybe that's the key. Maybe I should propose something more along the lines of that with this club also. This is KD2 UDU. Back to you there, Roy.
AC2GS. Yeah, I mean, if you could keep the plate spinning, if you could get people interested enough to having a more regularly scheduled net, it brings on more activity. If you turn on a radio and it's silent, you say, If you turn on the radio and someone's discussing something and maybe it's something that interests the guy, you've got another guy hooked. So With repeaters, the more time it's quiet, the more dangerous it is. But I mean, again, unfortunately, we're all kind of dealing with a negative trend. Up until about a year and a half ago, I think Brookhaven had a club, probably still has a club, it has a repeater, and they used to have a net on, I think, Tuesday nights, in which they took a subject, and because they were all technical guys over there in Brookhaven, it tended to be a technical question. And I used to like to listen to it, and then all of a sudden, one summer, it was gone. And I contacted them, and they said, "Oh yeah, we took the summer off, and we're gonna be busy for September, October, maybe November. We'll be back." Well, as far as I know, they never came back. So it's an unfortunate trend. You know, I seem to be doing the only technical nets in the metropolitan area anymore, unfortunately, which is a really bad sign. And nets are not what they are, what they were. And repeater activity also is not what it was. You know, if I kind of told you what was the hottest thing in amateur radio, it wouldn't help your club at all because it would be something like FT8. That's hot. That's very popular, but people do it by themselves. Sometimes they do it without themselves. I once had a guy listening to the tech net, typing away in the chat room, and telling me that he was going to put FT8 on autopilot and see what it felt like. And at the end of the technical net, he said he wasn't going to go back there because it was boring to watch a robot score points and such. So, you know, it's difficult to find those mediums that are popular and that you can kind of coalesce around.
I agree with you on the, or I agree with him on this FT8, FT4. I wound up doing FT8 for the St. Petersburg club that I was just telling you about on field day. And it's boring as hell. I prefer voice. I still don't know how to set it up for myself if I wanted to do FT8 or FT4 here, and I don't plan on doing it on my own station. I already worked all states voice, and you know, I'm trying to branch out and still catch some DX here. I'm only using a wire antenna of HF, but that actually blew down in the last hurricane, so right now I am not on HF. As you know, we've had several hurricanes this year down here, so that's kind of impacted some of the local guys too. But all right, Roy. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I appreciate this insight, and I will propose several things, including possibly doing a tech net down here, if that will attract people to get involved. I appreciate your insight, and you'll probably be hearing from me more often. You know, I like I said, I was no longer a LIMOC member, but I was. A participant in your nets, in your tech nets. I don't know if you recall me, but I used to live in Setauka. So I do appreciate your help in this. And I'm 7-3. All right, this is KD2UDU.
KC2GS. Okay, Wade. Well, good luck, and please do come back and tell me what worked and what didn't work. And if you come up with something new that I haven't tried, I'd love to hear about it. So I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you, Roy.
7-3.
This is KD2UDU.
Okie doke, 73. Ken, I think I hear you out there. Are you out there, Ken?
Yes, Roy. I'm Mobile on Echolink. Nice to hear you again. And I'm very proud to say that I have to make contact with you this morning on the net from Nebraska. And I spoke to you on a cobweb antenna, which is similar to a fan dipole, but it's turned sideways into a horizontal plane. So there you go. And here I am, Mobile in Nebraska. Back to you.
Okay, very good. It was my pleasure as well. And you were my only Nebraska contact. I got a bunch of guys from Texas. I got four guys from Texas. It's just the nature of, I guess, 10 meters. that these little ducks just connect Brooklyn to one place and one place only, and you get a bunch of them. But I was glad to hear you out there in Nebraska.
Yeah, especially out here. I'm in the most western part, almost in Wyoming, you know. And then it got really loud. You signaled it. And then it fell right away. It just, somebody pulled the plug on it. I guess the, you know, the pipeline shifted over to Texas then. That must have been what happened, you know. But it was nice when while it was there. So I read your QRZ page, and I picked up on the fan dipole that you said you're a fan of fan dipoles. And I meant to allude to you that that's the antenna I always use, a cobweb, which is similar to a fan dipole, but it's been turned downwards onto a horizontal plane and put out on spreaders to maintain that shape. And that's what I use all the time. And it has five different bands, and it works very well. Okay, I'll send it back to NET and add it back to the NET control. HG2GS, this is NET2VHG, Mobile in Nebraska. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Ken. Always a pleasure, and I won't be talking to you next Sunday morning because Howard and 2GOT will be net control, but I'll be back the following Sunday. So take it easy, be well, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Okay, thank you. I'll be listening. I'll listen out to the end of the net. It's
N2BHD.
Listening.
WA2VSM. K2CYR with a question.
Okay. Well, Stu, what do you want? What do you need, Stu?
It's a funny way to say hello. What do you want?
It's been a long day, Stu. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, WA2VFN. I'm sure I asked this question once before, but are we relegated solely to technical and or ham radio topics in our nets, or is it possible to have a net outside the realm of ham radio and technical issues? Perhaps a topic of conversation that might interest some people.
Well, I mean, as far as a net, and that can be any subject within FCC guidelines that you want. Usually these are set up for at least broadly speaking, a particular subject, because you may have noticed, or you may have been part of it, you know, when we veer very far off subject, there are people upset and complaining about that. So you can't win. I generally am open to any conversation. You know, if you want to join me on 10 meters where no one kind of checks my notes and such, you're more than happy to be there. But, you know, I'm using the repeater. I still remember a couple of weeks ago, Wesley kind of decided to give us a discourse on the history of the Ukraine-Russian war, and someone got very, 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 very upset.
Well, I wouldn't engage in any proposal for a net that has anything to do with politics. As I explained to you, I believe, once before, in my business, I try to listen to, even attend, as many CME courses as I can. And I've been doing this for a very long period of time. I'm a tremendous proponent of continuing medical education. We have some people like yourself who are physicians, and I don't know whether, and Ted also, A2GC, I would love to be able to have medical topics discussed here as if it was a CME course. I think a lot of people, or some people who can listen, tune in, might benefit. So just throwing that out for discussion.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't know. Again, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Last week I had a nice gentleman who came on, who commented that he didn't know what we were talking about, and this was confusing him. So to have something with CME credits, I guess it would be a useful thing if your audiences were all kind of in the same educational status and such. Because there's a lot that applies to CME credit type of information that many, many people listening tonight who just want to know how to turn the radio on or off or what have you would find confusing.